The Supreme Court kicks off its new season by debating who can use what bathroom. Legal bullying continues in the college admission scandal, and an opioid settlement hits $260 million. These stories, plus an update on Jussie Smollett in this week's Debriefing of the Law. The Supreme Court is back to work, which in itself is a rarity. The court only sits and holds court 38 days during the year. Yeah, that's a good gig. Now you know why the confirmation proceedings are so competitive. I mean, who doesn't want to only work 38 days out of the year? I mean, forget about having the holidays off. You get December off. But this year, the court will have a new look and feel as the Chief Justice, John Roberts, has instituted a new policy of shutting up. Yeah, starting this term, the justices cannot interrupt an attorney giving oral argument until the attorney has been given at least 2 minutes to state their case. Now, some might think this would be easy. I mean, not interrupting a person for 2 minutes. But those people are either not married or do not interact with attorneys on a regular basis. Lawyers are the one segment of society who interrupt others and get paid by the hour to do so. Objection, Your Honor. My opposing counsel is getting paid more than me, and I need to extend this another hour or so I can make my house payment. Yeah, interrupting and objecting is what we do. Now, to give you an idea, before this policy took effect, the average amount of time a lawyer had to present argument before the U.S. Supreme Court before interruption was 60 seconds. Yeah, gone in 60 seconds. But it was getting worse. I clocked a recent argument at 7 seconds from start to interruption. Now, to give you context, Usain Bolt won the Olympic gold in the 100 meters in 9.58 seconds. Yeah, that's faster than Usain Bolt. But the case was Maryland v. King. I'm going to play for you from beginning to interruption so you can judge for yourself.
There have been 225 matches, 75 prosecutions, and 42 convictions, including that of Respondent King.
Well, that's really good. I'll bet you if you conducted a lot of unreasonable searches and seizures, you'd get more convictions, too. That proves absolutely nothing.
Yeah, Scalia waited all of 7 seconds before he ripped into this person's argument. Can you imagine being this attorney? I mean, you prepared your argument, worked hard at it, and 7 seconds in, Scalia said, it meant absolutely nothing. Go flip burgers. If it had been me, it would have been followed up with a clean up on aisle 4, please. We have seemed to have had an accident. A mop is needed, aisle 4. So I'm thinking, this new policy, yeah, it's going to be difficult. This might be tougher than training my black lab to leave a piece of bacon alone for 2 minutes. Or how about telling Trump he can't tweet for 2 minutes after a Nancy Pelosi and Adam Schiff joined press conference in a hot tub? Yeah, it's going to be hard to follow. I guess that's what I am saying. All right, and I would be right. Already, Justice Sotomayor has violated the two-minute policy twice. In Kansas v. Garcia, at the 42nd mark, Sotomayor became the first violator of this policy when she asked Attorney Paul Hughes this question.
If this element is not present, there is no IRCA preemption.
Even if they were applying to a college?
I'm sorry, you can answer that question after your time is...
I'm sorry.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Sotomayor, wait your turn. Stay in your lane. These justices look like a pack of greyhounds behind the starting gate, just itching to get going. But Mr. Roberts, Mr. No-Nonsense, quickly put an end to this quick start. Roberts then immediately sent her to the penalty box, and she didn't speak again for 10 minutes. Yes, this is going to be a great Supreme Court season. Well, the court has taken up big cases this term, and none bigger than who can use what restroom. Now, teenage boys everywhere are suddenly big Supreme Court fans. But this is going to be groundbreaking. Women for too long have had to suffer from long lines. Time to open up the men's room for the ladies. Ladies, you might want to watch out for the little pools of water in front of urinals. Yeah, yeah. Pools of water. I'm sure that's what it is. Well, guys know to be careful where they step, and I thought I'd pass this little bit of information along. So with that, it came as no surprise that the Supreme Court was very concerned with who can use what restroom. Now, in three cases, the court took up the issue of whether Title VII, which prohibits sex discrimination, also prohibits discrimination based on sexual orientation and transgenderism. Now, I find these cases fascinating, as it could split the conservatives, the originalists versus the textualists. I mean, here's what I mean. There is no doubt that when Congress passed Title VII, which prohibits discrimination in the workplace on the basis of race, sex, religion, color, and national origin, that Congress had no intention of providing protection for employees based upon their sexual orientation. Now, experts on all sides of this issue agree with this point. As in 1964, almost every single state in the United States criminalized homosexual behavior. It's probably a fair point that if the conduct in question was criminal in 48 states, that it was not the intent to cover said acts in the employment context. I would say that's a fair reading. So the originalists, who would be primarily concerned with the original intent of the persons who passed the law, would not find that Title VII was intended to provide protection for sexual orientation discrimination. But the textualist might come out the other way. See, a textualist looks to the actual text used to ascertain the meaning of a provision, and here, when the law says, because of sex, that would seem to include sexual orientation. After all, if two employees both married a bill over the weekend, the female employee would be protected, but the male employee could be fired. The distinguishing difference? The sex of the employee. This exchange between RBG and attorney Carlin illustrates this point.
Question about females.
Ms. Carlin, how do you answer the argument that back in 1964, this could not have been in Congress's mind? Because in many states, male same-sex relations was a criminal offense. The American Psychiatric Association labeled homosexuality a mental illness.
But here is where Sotomayor and RBG come in. Both of these normal liberal justices were very concerned with how such a ruling would impact bathroom usage. Apparently, the women on the court are not too fond of opening up their bathrooms to the other gender. But a work policy that requires men to use the men's room and ladies to use the ladies' room is also a policy based upon sex. Here's what Sotomayor said.
But big issue right now raging the country is bathroom usage, same-sex bathroom usage. How are those cases going to be dealt with absent a congressional exemption other than BFOQ?
So the Supreme Court deals with the important issues of the day: presidential powers, free speech, and can a woman use a urinal? But to further prove my point that the Supreme Court is a body of learned legal experts debating the ever-present critical issues of the day, I offer you this big question of the day that was addressed at the Supreme Court. Should justices and attorneys arguing before the justices wear Hooters outfits? It gives me great pain to say I am not making this up. That was an actual hypothetical that the High Court addressed. Let's listen in.
If the court said women who come to argue should argue in Hooters outfits, and the men should wear ties.
We're not. I mean,
I know.
We can talk absurd examples.
No,
we can
but
talk
I can,
real world
I'll
examples.
Give you a real world example. Which
let me go on the record. I am a big fan of this. Now, not for the outfits, mind you, but if wings can spice up a Super Bowl party, it is surely a must-have for my Supreme Court watching party. Cold beer here. Cold. Get your cold beer here. No, not you, Kavanaugh. You need to wait till after work is over. All right, now to those of you who say that the courts are not political, let me offer a laugh. Not with you, but at you. Of course the courts are political. Now, they shouldn't be, but just because I say that in front of a mirror 3 times a day does not make it so. For example, if I say in front of the mirror, I am Brad Pitt. I am Brad Pitt. I am Bradley Pitt. Does that mean that Jennifer Aniston has any thoughts about me? No. All right, so just saying it does not make it so. But let's listen in as the court addresses whether whether the court should be political.
Do you agree or disagree with Judge Posner's statement that the statute should be read to encompass sexual orientation discrimination to, quote, avoid placing the entire burden of updating old statutes on the legislative branch?
I disagree with Judge Posner. I don't think.
Yes, courts, you are only working 38 days out of the year. Take some of the burden off of those legislatures. Why not take up taxation while you're at it? Sure, you are not voted into office or can be voted out. Who really cares about taxation without representation anymore? That's so last century. Yes, I am looking at you, Kansas. Well, one last fun occurrence during the first week of argument. Have you heard of a guy pulling the sister switcheroo, dating both sisters consecutively? I mean, those are the stories of legends. But similarly, there is a legend about an attorney pulling the old save the goods for a rebuttal trick. Now, here's how it works. The petitioner, the side that lost below, usually gets to go first during oral argument, but the attorney can reserve time for rebuttal. That way, the attorney can have the last word. Kind of like married life, you all want the last word. Now, typically, a lawyer will just reserve 2 minutes out of, let's say, 15 or 20 for rebuttal. But legend has it that one attorney in a time long, long ago reserved all of his time for rebuttal. That way, the other attorney would not know what to say. This is the argumento switcheroo. No one in this century has ever tried this, however. Until now, in Bostock v. Clayton County, Attorney Carlin tried the whole argumento switcheroo. The attorney was only 3 minutes into her argument when she saw a break in the action, and she went for it. Listen in.
That's discrimination because of sex. Well, if no one has any further questions, I'll reserve the remainder of my time for rebuttal.
Oh, I think we'll have further questions.
Jaws were on the floor. What guts, what gusto. What an idiot. Of course you can't date sisters consecutively, and you can't reserve all of your time for rebuttal. Nice try, Carlin, but not today. Well, let me quickly hit on two other interesting notes from the court's first few days in session. The unanimous verdict. It's as American as apple pie, baseball, and not killing dogs in movies. Guys? Of course you can kill guys in movies. Grandma? Yep, she's fair game. But killing the dog? No, now that's just wrong. Also, what's wrong? Convicting someone based upon less than a unanimous verdict. Think about it. We can't get unanimity on what to eat for lunch. But when it comes to convicting a person, a unanimous verdict is required. Or is it? In Ramos v. Louisiana, Louisiana changed its laws to allow convictions based on less than a unanimous verdict. First of all, no. This will destroy all of the Law and Order shows already in production. And that's a lot of episodes. I mean, I believe that Moses actually appeared as himself in the first few episodes. But you don't want to hear the jury foreman saying, "Your Honor, most of us have reached a verdict. We are still waiting on Jimbo, but we got things to do, so we're just going to move this along." No, a lot is riding on this case. The court was somewhat perplexed as to what would be the more attractive outcome from the defense point of view. So let me throw this out to you. If you were charged with a crime, would you rather have your criminal case tried in front of 6 jurors where unanimity was required, or 12 where the state had to convince 10 out of the 12 that you were guilty? All right, stay tuned for the outcome of this case, which will come probably in June. The court is off this week. No surprise. They already worked 5 days this month. and they are exhausted. But they get back to work next Monday, and we'll bring you those updates as they happen. Well, the reports are in, and Felicity Huffman is doing really well in prison. She is almost through with her sentence. She received 14 days, which has a lot of people saying that's longer than most of these spoiled kids will likely spend in their respective schools. So, not bad. Well, it's being reported that Felicity is wearing prison garb and that this is very difficult. I can imagine the hardest thing in prison for a Hollywood actress is the prison garb. What? What, this doesn't come in black? I cannot be seen on the red carpet in orange. I would have taken 14 months if it could have come in a black evening gown. Well, according to Entertainment Tonight, Huffman is in a room with inmates with a toilet in the middle of the floor. She's in prison garb, and there's work duty. It's pretty serious stuff. I mean, come on. Toilet in the middle of the floor? Dude, this is a guy's dream. Let's play sink the paper. Seriously, I am never, and I repeat, never going to jail. That's just wrong. But the 14-day sentence has left many wondering if the others wished they had pled out. They surely would have pled out if they knew they were only going to get 14 days in jail. But have no fear, because the prosecutors are now bringing new charges against the others. That's right. Now the prosecutors are alleging money laundering. Specifically, the U.S. attorney says Lori, her husband, and 14 others will now be charged with the additional crimes of conspiring to launder the bribes and other payment in furtherance of the fraud by funneling them through Rick, Singer's purported charity, and his for-profit corporation. All right, I'm sorry, but some prosecutor is thinking a little too high of him or herself. All these parents did was try to use their celebrity status to give their kids an unfair advantage. That is the American way. Just ask the Democratic presidential frontrunner Joe Biden and his son Hunter. It's how things are done. I'm sorry, but this whole case is embarrassing for the legal profession. Is no one else concerned about the prosecutorial bullying that is going on? Oh yeah, you won't take 20 years? Why don't we get you for money laundering as well? I mean, at some point, some managerial type has to come in and say, you know, we have actual real crimes we need to pursue, like maybe bust some prep sports league for giving kids of professional athletes more looks than other kids. Let's move on to other things. Also last week, a huge settlement was reached in the opioid case. Even Trump tweeted, it's huge, the biggest ever. It is hugely. Well, hours before the first federal trial in the opioid epidemic was set to begin, four pharmaceutical companies reached a settlement totaling $260 million. Now, the four companies, McKesson Corp., Cardinal Health Incorporated, Amerisource, Bergen Corp., and Teva Pharmaceutical Industries, reached a settlement Monday morning with the two plaintiffs. Now, the settlement was struck between midnight and 1 a.m. Clearly, this case was not going to trial. If you are talking settlement at 1 a.m. instead of preparing for trial, I am thinking all of your cards is in the single basket. It's like my son staying up till 2 a.m. just to see the snow start, so school will be canceled. Finally, last week, a federal judge ruled on Tuesday that the lawsuit against actor Jussie Smollett will not be dismissed. The suit asked that Smollett reimburse the police department the $130,000 spent on investigating his alleged attack, which he asked to be dismissed because he couldn't have known how much time and money was spent on the investigation. All right, I get it. You might not have known the total amount of the bill, but I am thinking you could have helped them narrow their investigation just a bit. So in January, if you do not remember, Smollett claimed that he was the victim of a racist and homophobic attack in Chicago. But to be fair, there were holes in the story from the onset. Let me just point out a couple. First, Jussie decided to go get a Subway sandwich at 2 a.m. in January in Chicago. Now, I like Subway sandwiches, sure. But 2 a.m. in Chicago in January, that just doesn't make sense. I know one gets the munchies, but that is ridiculous. And then there's this. Supposedly, two white men wearing MAGA hats saw this at 2 a.m., recognized Smollett as being an actor on Empire, and then attacked him. Yeah, give me a break. No MAGA hat-wearing homophobic dude would ever recognize a character from Empire. That's further afield than saying Trump was asked to do a poetry recitation for Oprah. Just something is off with the whole scene. I guess that's what I am saying. Well, thank you for listening to today's podcast. If you enjoyed this podcast, please give us a 5-star review. We need your love to help us continue highlighting the funnier side of the law. I wanted to give a special shout out to our Vice President of Operations, Wendy Oster, without whom this entire operation would be a mess. Our marketing team, Redbird Solutions, and Leanne Holmberg for spreading the good word about us. Sean Wynn and 15.5 Features for making me sound way better than I actually do. And Ryan Kuhn and Paul Kuhn of Triplicity Marketing for our technical and computer support.